Well, welcome to another edition of the Equip Podcast. We're excited about this one. I'm here with our lead pastor, Jordan, and the mad scientist, Jonathan Irvin. How about just looking to that camera right there, John?
He did this camera.
He did his hair especially for this podcast.
You know, I'm never getting fancy again. Try to look nice for y'all. All of our followers.
He wore his best shirt.
Hey, Chris Miller came up to me and he said, man, you've been working out. And I was like, small shirt.
That's right. So anyway, all right, well, if you've been following along and judging by the numbers, you haven't.
Not that bad.
I'm kidding.
Oh, my God.
A few weeks ago, we started talking about the church's broken system. And kind of dove into that. We'll kind of review a little bit of this today. But today, really, wanting to bring a little bit more clarity to the broken system. I just had to run down the hallway to get something, and I'm still out of breath. But wanted to bring a little more clarity to the broken system of the church. And it's really kind of a rut that I feel like the church has been in for a long, long time. Not just this church, but the church. And so we want to look at, how do we get out of that? How do we get into a more biblical model? How do we get into a plurality of leadership, elders, eldering, those kind of things are the things that we want to look at. And so today, really trying to discuss some challenges that go along with that, some fears that go along with that, that keep us operating sometimes in some unbiblical ways, not because our hearts are bad, but a lot of times it's just because of what we know and what we've seen. And so, again, disclaimer, we don't have it all figured out. We don't know it all, but we're trying to do the best we can to do things the way God designed it and to honor him in that. So we look at it, and I would just throw this out. Like, how would y'all define the broken system as you think about it? Because we've talked about this for years and years now as we've been kind of moving towards more plurality of leadership. For each of you, like, how would you define it? What do you think about when you think about that?
I mean, I know for me, I think the biggest thing is just this idea that everything the church does is built upon a handful of people.
Right.
And so I think, and you hear about churches that have pastors that burn out, and I think it's because of this system. Mm-hmm. Is that all these expectations and so much weight is put on them to know everything, to be the best person at budgets, at care, at preaching, at, you know, everything. And so I think it's this idea that you hire pastors to do the work of ministry, and rather than understanding that pastors' goal is to equip people to then go do the work of ministry. And to me, that's the simplest this terms of, I feel like, kind of what we've always seen the broken system as. And it was something that, as we got bigger very quickly, that issue became much more apparent, and we realized very quickly there's all these people, and we're trying to do all of these things for them, and it was impossible for us to support all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would you add to that?
I would echo some of that same stuff, but when I think about it, I think the diagram does a great job of everything about the gospel and the redeemed people of God and the future mission of God resting on the shoulders of a few, when it was always meant, that's why it's broken, that's why it was always meant to be spread across all of the people of God. And I picture it almost like a raised garden bed, where like the fruit of what you see of the broken system is what condemns itself, where you have really church becomes an event that I attend, not a people that I belong to. Ministry becomes a thing that we hire out, not something that I engage with, where functions and ministries become personal preferences, not, what's at the center of everything is not Christ and his mission and the Holy Spirit. And so that's the thing that I see. And I think there's a root system that like kind of exists below that lies underneath that. That's some of the fruit that we see. But I think there's almost like at the root system of it is a compromise of like what is, and it's the word that comes to mind is pragmatism of just what's practical.
Yeah.
It just becomes practical to just export these things.
Yeah. Well, operating in what we call the broken system, where the ministry is really done by a handful of people, it's a lot easier for everybody else. It's like you said, you can be more of a consumer. You can kind of just come in and go out. But when we do it biblically, everybody's a part of the body, as we should be. And you know, you mentioned the diagram and everything that we've got, and we'll put this up on the screen for people to see. But that left side is really what a diagram, gosh, we came up with back in 2019 to show really the broken system and the foundation being Jesus. And again, a lot of this done not because people have bad hearts, but just because it's what we've seen. And studying a little bit of church history, a lot of this stuff started in the second century,
right?
Where they started appointing bishops and different people to be over certain areas, to approve who could be baptized, and really kind of started elevating people above the body, and putting certain people with more responsibility and that kind of thing. And I think it just morphed into a lot of what we see today. But the foundation being Jesus, and then having this little small group, which is oftentimes staff or a small group of volunteers that ultimately are performing ministry functions and programs, trying to support and help a larger group of people. And for us, as you mentioned, John, that became a really large group of people really fast. And not only was the system broken, but I think we were broken by trying to keep up with everything because of how it was functioning back in the early days even. And so when you look at that on the left, it's really the staff performing functions or programs to support people. If you look at it on the right, which we took this out of Ephesians chapter 4, what you begin to see is a leadership development mindset. Ephesians 4, 11 and 12, where God gave us, you know, the apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the equipping of the saints for the work of ministry. And so we see more leadership development. We see people being equipped to do ministry. We see each part of the body beginning to do its work. And that's such a more healthy way to do things rather than it falling on just a handful of people. And so you see leaders equipping people for the work of ministry, which is a much more biblical system. And you see people who are actually discipling people rather than people just performing programs.
Yeah.
And we've said this before in the past, but programs don't disciple people. People disciple people. And I think that's a really important distinction for us to make. And so hopefully that diagram can help people understand a little bit more, too, of what we're talking about here, is trying to get out of a spot where for years we used this analogy that we felt like we were somewhat of a skyscraper built on toothpicks. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot supporting it. And now I think we're in a much more healthy place where we have a lot of people who they're discipling people. And we talk about this some, too, but one of the my favorite things about our church is when people get baptized, like just this past Sunday, hearing story after story after story of people getting baptized, but they're not talking about one of us. They're talking about who's been walking along beside them, discipling them in their connect group or discipleship group or at the workplace, whatever it might be. And really, I mean, that's how it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
So when did you guys start to recognize this? I know we talked about it being early on, but John, like, what are some of the things or signs maybe that you saw that this model does not promote longevity?
I think in some ways you just kind of noticed when, even kind of as we grew as a church, you know, from an attendance standpoint, we grew pretty quickly, but then I also kind of saw it a little bit like a bell curve where it kind of began to taper off again. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is so many people were just coming to consume what we had created for them. And then whenever something was asked for them to participate in, that didn't seem near as desirable anymore. And I think that's when I realized we had created a lot of great programs. And something I was thinking about is that, like, in some ways it's was harder to do it in the broken system because more things are on a less amount of people. Sometimes it's easier because, like, it's easier to put together a program than sometimes develop people. Like, people are difficult sometimes. And I think you also have a lot more control over it of, like, you get to do it how you want to do it. And I think even for myself, sometimes I can lean to, well, I can put together a good program. Mm-hmm. I can put together a good service. If I got to sit down with somebody, I'm not as good at that. And so I think some of it was even having to look at myself and going, like, am I actually, like, making disciples, or am I just making a good event that people like coming to? And I think it was kind of having to come to terms with that of that's kind of what we're doing. And it was just more, again, like you said, not because of bad intentions is, I think, you know, but it was as we kind of looked up and looked around, we realized lots of people like coming here.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're actually catching the role that they're supposed to play. Exactly. And somehow we've got to change that.
Yeah.
You know, this, you showed me this diagram in my job interview.
Yeah.
And so this was what the reason this resonated with me is because being exposed to sort of a broader network of churches, they were trying to pioneer sort of a, not pioneer, what am I saying? Like, everything that was happening in that system was built around a broken presupposition, which is we need to find a guy that has the it factor that people could rally around. And, you know, that's the assessment's built around that. Mm-hmm. The residency is built around that. Everybody's philosophy of ministry is built around that. Mm-hmm. And it's already... One, what we're saying is that the mission of God is built around this artificial bottleneck of a external set of criteria of, oh, that's a guy.
Yeah.
And now we can leverage guy for impact. Then we can celebrate and write articles and, you know, we can get a lot of miles out of the guy.
Right.
And when I was in other ministry circles, I was around a lot of that guy.
Yeah.
And watching them behind the scenes struggle with, I got to be at this place and I got to be at that place and I got to be in this meeting and I got to go do this. And, you know, I mean, you don't have to, but that's the feeling.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of like, when are we actually doing ministry?
Right.
When are we actually reaching lost people? When are we discipling new believers? When are we like those types of things? And, and I think for me, from afar, I felt like by just the sheer crowd that was coming, I was watching that from afar as a college student for you of the demands of the time, the energy, the attention, the expectations, the how do we continue to accommodate? Because, and I'm saying all of this because of when I was saying that about pragmatism, it's a good-hearted intention. How do we continue to make space for more lost people?
Yeah.
How do we continue to make space for more broken people to experience the gospel? And that is an impulse that we as a church never want to lose. We always want to prioritize. And you're going to talk about it this Sunday.
Preaching on it this Sunday, yeah.
We can never lose the fact that when the disciples heard, go and make disciples of all nations, they consistently interfaced with lost people and extended the hope of the gospel to them in increasingly further and further places from the word, from the place that they heard those words the first time.
Right.
We can never lose that impulse. But the continued teaching or baptizing, teaching them all that I have entrusted to you, like the rest of the Great Commission, that also has to take place. And I think that's just sort of the season of that we've kind of gotten into come around 2019 when you were beginning to interview me and was what we've been trying to sort through this whole time for the last 7 years. Yeah. But it's And I guess I'm jumping ahead to some of the future questions. Like, I think that the broken system right now for most people is just the system.
Yeah.
It's just the air that the current church model breathes.
And I think it feels good at times. Like, mm-hmm. it meets some of the needs that they want to, they are able to get out of it what they ultimately feel like they
want. At the end of the day, there is fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And there is sometimes good fruit. And unfortunately, it also comes at the expense a lot of times. It's fruit that it's coming from a source, and it's coming in a way that you don't yet know the full scope of what's unhealthy about it.
Mm.
And sometimes it takes it erodes the life of the pastor, or it erodes the life of the people for it to be like even a house that's built structurally unsound. Sure, you can move in and you can have the joy of moving into this new house and you can live in it for a season. And maybe you get to live in it and then you sell it. But eventually the structural integrity of a house built on something that is structurally unsound, the foundation being off, eventually it's going to reveal itself.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I think oftentimes that does end up where you see leaders, like you said, John, oftentimes burn out. Mm-hmm. You know, I experienced that myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it happens for a couple of reasons. I think it's an identity issue, but I think that also plays into the feeling of I have to do everything,
mm-hmm.
or somebody's going to get upset if mm-hmm. I'm not the one who's there or does this or does everything, then somebody's going to get upset. And if you don't know who you are in Christ, it's hard to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize the scripture's true that the fear of man is a snare,
mm-hmm.
and you get ensnared in a lot of things that you really shouldn't be doing in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's honestly why we see a lot of moral failures in churches.
That was going to be the other thing I was going to say is, like, I think around the same time we were noticing that, you just started to see it. It was like a season where it was like moral failure,
culture at large.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, what's happening? How? Yeah. Why is this?
Everybody that is the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes I think those are exits.
Mm-hmm.
I just think sometimes I think they were fine to get caught. I think they were. It just meant I can get out,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
you know, and that's sad. That's a shame that it gets to that point, but the pressure can be a lot. And so,
can I tell you one of the first places I recognized the broken system?
Yeah.
As a seminary student, trying to, you know, find my way in mm-hmm. ministry. I remember no matter what, every job application, every job board was, we want you to have a Master's of Divinity or better, which is a 96-hour degree program, and 5 years of experience. And it didn't matter if your church was 25 people, of just like the expectation and the hope, the prerequisites were not something that, like, it just was like a copy paste sort of thing of, yeah. like, this is the, now, yes, you want to be led by a qualified elder. Yes, you want people with experience, but there was a copy paste sort of mentality, yeah. of like, if we could just get the guy, mm-hmm. things would be different. Not if the Spirit of God lived inside of us, things would be different.
Right. Yeah. And I think that is a big, big thing, is to realize it's not me, it's we.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the guy, it's the body,
mm-hmm.
is a huge difference in that, and people realizing that, and you know, I think that's a challenge, though, because it is a rut in a way that I think churches have a hard time getting out of.
And sometimes I think it can be more complicated, it can be more difficult, because then you are involved. Sometimes it's easier to do things with less amount of people, and yeah. but at the same time, then you're missing out on the full scope of, I feel like, what we see biblically, that God does, like, it talks about the church being a body for a reason because of all the different many parts. And I think one of the things for me, the reason sometimes I struggle with it is more out of a place is I don't want to ask other people to do things that I'm paid to do, you know? Right. And I remember when I was going through the book Experiencing God, and it was talking about a pastor having a similar thing. There was a member of his church that he didn't want to ask him to do something, and it was like driving, you know, an hour both ways to go and serve this other church. And this guy responded and said, basically, don't rob me of this blessing to serve my God. And I just like thought about like, in order to, you know, to make it easier on somebody else, you're robbing them of the opportunity to, sure. to be used. And I feel like that's what is happening is now it's like yeah. every heart and soul class that I teach, every time on a Sunday, all I'm thinking is like, I wish I could shake this group of people to see like the role that they have. And the best thing I can do is to get out of the way mm-hmm. so that they can then go and do that. But, right. But it's kind of fighting my own tendency of like, I don't want to ask them to do something because I feel like it's going to be a hindrance. But like, I realize that it doesn't make sense, but yeah. it's just a natural thing, like in my own mind.
Well, there's so many multi-layered things, even in what you just shared. There's the identity piece, mm-hmm. right? Like, I feel guilty mm-hmm. asking for help. I feel a sense of shame of like, I'm paid. They help pay my salary
right.
for this to take place. I guess I'll just do it, mm-hmm. right? There's the identity piece. There's the practical piece of like, well, they haven't had the same amount of training. Mm-hmm. This will just be easier. I'll get this done. Plus, I've got to write a sermon for Sunday. Plus, I've got to do this wedding this weekend. Plus, I've got to, and this the to-do
and,
list.
And then you're thinking, well, they're busy. They've mm-hmm. got their own right. life and, you know, kids or whatever. And, mm-hmm. and you know, you feel like, gosh, I don't want to put something else on their plate. Mm-hmm. But again, I think if people aren't engaged in the body, and that's one of those clear call things we talk about is they haven't said yes to a clear call to the body of Christ and yes to a clear call to the mission of Christ,
right.
then they're missing out on a lot of things. And
yeah.
And one of the things that happens is if we don't, as you said, John, I think, you know, kind of get out of the way, mm-hmm. And we talk about it sometimes as coming not – stepping aside, but coming
right.
along beside. Mm-hmm. If we don't do that, what ends up happening is we become the bottleneck
right.
yep. on the church. And so it's only going to grow so much, mm-hmm. I mean, and in a certain way. And so I think that's something important too, is to realize like we don't want to be the cap. We don't want to be the lid or the ceiling.
Yeah, and you know, I can be this person. But have you ever had a family member, both of you, or I don't think, are this person, that they consistently, they'll buy the, like, $5 version of something 10 times before they buy the, like, $50 version of something that, you know what I mean?
Have you ever met John Irvin?
It just depends, all right? Depends
well, what it is. Well, and I... But sometimes in that moment, you make that choice because, well, I know I can afford it right. right now, and then I'll have it, and then it can be. But it's still, at the end of the day, the cheaper version, and it's going to break, and I'm just going to have to wind up doing it again anyway. That's the broken system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's more costly to invest in leaders. You open yourself up to relational wounds, to deeper hurts, but there is a higher quality product on the other end of it. And I think when you boil a lot of this back down, it's a lot of decisions made from a place of scarcity and fear rather than a place of faith and abundance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the model that we have tried to lean into, the correct biblical model, is God has a cattle on 1,000 hills mm-hmm. that the earth is his, and the earth deserves to know and hear him and hear his message. And there are other people that want to join in. It's faith. It's faith that there are other resources and other leaders, and there's an abundance that God desires to pour his spirit out on the earth. And I love that the vision has always been until every person knows, yeah. right? Like, we're not going to settle for, well, you know, until we can reach like 100 people or like it's,
yeah.
there's a... But the broken system has settled for, like, we don't have enough people, we don't yeah. have enough money, I'm barely getting by, like a fear and a scarcity that I think drives the broken system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you look at it too, it's one of those things of, do we have confidence as the ones who are equipping people that the Holy Spirit will work through them? Mm-hmm. Like, because it says something a little bit about our faith if we don't have the confidence in people that God's entrusted us to shepherd and mm-hmm. to lead and to pour into and to put courage into. Mm-hmm. Like, if we don't believe that God can use them, how are they ever going to believe that God can use them? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think for us, that's some of the most rewarding things to see is when people who have come in and they've given their life to Christ and they've grown, and then all of a sudden they're leading things and they're mm-hmm. stepping into stuff and they're, you know, going on to plant a church or whatever it might be. And those are the things that matter.
And that's such a hard thing to try to just explain without someone experiencing it first. I mean, I think about even the illustration you just gave. I mean, the thing that came to my mind was like painting is like getting good paint versus bad paint is like until you like finally experience when you spend a little bit more money and how much easier it is, like it's tough to like make that make sense. And what kind of came to my mind as we were talking was when we first started, like, and we would do baptisms and we would have sometimes like 30, 40 people getting baptized. And I remember it would, you know, we would like split up because like it just, from a physical side, you just get tired doing it. And I remember like having Sundays where I had the opportunity to baptize a little 20 people in a row. And there's an aspect of that, that like, that feels good. That feel like, man, I got to do that today. And then last night I was talking to Natalie and I was just telling her how proud I was of her. Mm-hmm. And she had the opportunity to baptize a friend of ours' daughter on Sunday. But then in the past year, she's baptized more people than I have.
Yeah.
And the opportunity she's had to just pour into different people. And what I was thinking about, I was like, to see that has felt so much better than my opportunity to baptize these people that really I had no relationship with. And it was just kind of like, this is why it's so much better. But it's just, it took experience in it before I could really go, that's why it's better. That's why it's worth it.
And it hasn't really felt this way in a long time to me. Mm-hmm. But there has been, especially in other church cultures, not so much in ours, a like, well, but I want the pastor to do it.
Yeah.
And, or like, you know, well, I want the pastor to do it, not just a pastor, but the pastor to do the wedding. I mean, we've got connect group leaders that officiate weddings sometimes. There's just a...
They're not legal, but they do it. I mean, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, I like that we got a little criminal activity going on.
It's a little edgy.
Somebody could just go out and commit a crime on our staff or something real quick. That'd be, I mean, just a real blessing.
Let's not do that.
This crime is a blessing to the both of us.
You know, I mean, the disciples were a ragtag bunch, you know?
Yeah.
Peter cut off a guy's ear, you know?
Yeah. I have a theory about that. Have I ever told you my theory about that?
Moving on.
Okay.
All right. No, I want to hear the theory.
I mean, the only way you only hit an ear and not a shoulder is not if you're swinging this way. You got to be swinging this way. I think Peter was going for the head, and the guy ducked.
Absolutely, Peter. Peter was.
A lot can happen when a man turns their head. Sometimes it's just
I don't even know what we're talking about, but yes, I think he was definitely swinging for the head.
So you were saying
that Brandon had another point that he
was. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
So. For those who haven't quit watching yet, so when we started this transition, it was kind of funny because it was right before COVID. We started preaching the DIY stuff, preached on it so much we had people leave the church because we just kept hammering on this, and it still took a long time before we really started seeing a lot of the fruit from it. And I remember, Jordan, too, I remember you used to come in and talk to me a lot about being so just frustrated with the discipleship and equipping area.
Me?
And feeling like it wasn't getting anywhere. And when And I remember telling you, like, just keep pushing the flywheel. Mm-hmm. Just keep pushing the flywheel. Just it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Like, more's happening than what you see. And now looking back on that, it's really awesome to see what has happened. But what were y'all's initial thoughts as we kind of began this transition? If you think back to that time, I know you kind of came in as we were beginning. John, you've been through a lot of it. What were y'all's thoughts as we kind of started going through this? That I was crazy? That probably wouldn't be a bad assessment.
You can be right and crazy.
I think initially I didn't see it as big of a problem as you did. And I think it was because it was comfortable.
Yeah.
Even though I could identify there was an issue, sometimes, and I think, you know, many of us can relate to that, is you can look at even at your life and go, I know this isn't best, but it's just a little more comfortable.
Like eating a whole Little Caesar's pizza. Exactly. For lunch is probably not the best.
No, but it feels great in the moment.
But I get uncomfortable watching that.
Look, we all have our spiritual gifts, right? But so I think, like, I would see your passion behind it, and I'm like, I mean, I agree with this, but I think, like, I didn't realize how much it had just, like, was causing the church as a whole not to be healthy. And right. So I think it just took me, I mean, so to me, like, the fact that we had to talk about it over and over and over again, it was helpful for myself. I mean, yeah. You know, like, I wasn't immune to needing to have, you know, I know you talk a lot about, like, us having to have revelations, and mm-hmm. I feel like that's almost like what was taking place was, like, my mind was having to be renewed. Mm-hmm. And so, but that doesn't happen overnight. So again, mm-hmm. that was just, for me, it took time to really kind of grab a hold of the full thing. And so,
yeah,
I think I was still fresh off of, like, being an associate pastor at a small church plant, and I had to think that way to help. So that was operationally what you were inviting us into to do. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I remember you said that when we talked on the phone, and when I came down to interview, you said, sounds like this is what you've been doing anyway.
Yeah, right.
And so operationally, it was right in line with all of my convictions, all of my experience, everything that, and I felt like this was always your heart when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And I just remember watching Billy. There's a little bit of me, I think, because of the way Billy did it, I thought this was going to be easy. I mean, we used to have 1,000 people in connect groups, and we used to, you know, have like 120 connect group leaders or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the hard part is that scaled from small to medium to big linearly.
Yeah.
And now we were trying to reverse engineer, trying to make a big church do small church things.
Yeah.
And, or maybe to say, like, a group of people that had come and started enjoying the benefits of sitting in the crowd, mm-hmm. to operate as if they were, like, essential participants. Mm-hmm. And it's hard when you have a building like ours, and you have a critical mass of people like ours, and you have, you know, is incredible of a worship leader, incredible preaching, to then make people feel my participation is mission critical.
Yeah, right.
And so that's where that was the difficulty I faced, mm-hmm. of, like, yeah. Why, that was my frustration of, like, I don't know that I can get these people to see, like, why this is so important.
Yeah.
And so that was probably my mm-hmm. my initial thoughts. That and being in my late 20s and just high strung about everything.
Yeah. Well, and it is, you know, when you're, as John said, when you're changing a mindset, and you're not really just changing a mindset that exists for a short period of time, but you're changing a mindset that for some people has existed their entire life.
Right.
If they grew up in church, or even what they've observed of church, mm-hmm. is this or that. And then all of a sudden you're saying, yeah, what? It's kind of like Jesus when he was always causing these worldview train wrecks. Mm-hmm. And he comes in and he's like, yeah, it's harder for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what? Because they saw wealth as a sign of blessing. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus is like totally throwing them off. And if you read the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount, that's what that whole, like Matthew 5 through 7 is nothing but train wreck, worldview mm-hmm. train wrecks. Right. And he says, you always heard it said, but truly I tell you. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of what we were going through for mm-hmm. these years was, I know this is what you've always seen, mm-hmm. but this is what we believe the Bible's mm-hmm. teaching us and telling us to mm-hmm. do. And I don't know if y'all remember my have so many great illustrations, right? The illustration with the broken hammer mm-hmm. That I broke and I zip tied it.
Look at it in your office every day.
Yeah, I keep all those things in there just as reminders. But it's the wall of bad illustration. but really just talking about how, you know, if it's not designed correctly, it's not going to function the way it's designed to, or should function. Mm-hmm. Right. And even thinking about it from a standpoint, if my family owned a hammer manufacturing plant and my father left me a blueprint of how to make these hammers and he leaves and I go, I'm just going to make them the way. Right. He don't know what he's talking about. I'm just going to make them the way I want to make them. Mm-hmm. And then I make it that way and it's not really working. And then he comes back mm-hmm. and he's like, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, why don't you just do it the way I told you to? And yet the church is the only organization in the world, and obviously it's an organism. I don't need emails about that. But it's obviously a different type of organization, but we're the only organization that we'll just keep doing the same thing over and over again and failing mm-hmm. and just blame it on, well, the people are just hard-hearted or they just don't get it or the world's just bad or whatever. And it's like, maybe we need to kind of look in the mirror and go, maybe we're not doing it the way mm-hmm. God intended us to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was something to have to really begin to help people see, like, look, we can't make these broken hammers and expect them to work. We've got to get into the blueprint that God has for us and that we see.
How would you answer that question, B? You said, you asked us what was...
I get to ask the questions. I don't
want to get this. Okay.
I'm kidding. All right. What is it?
Go ahead. When did you... Because I mean, obviously, looking at the original vision document, there's a lot about that already mm-hmm. had the biblical model baked into it.
Yeah.
Did you ever get somewhere along the journey of planting the church and growing the church that you were like, crap, I've replicated the broken system? Or
yeah. Man, I tell you what ended up happening, because, you know, our original vision, our original mission statement was to connect unbelievers to God and believers to each other through the equipping of the saints for the work of ministry. And even in the vision document, it talks about how we will not judge our success by how many people are there on Sunday morning, but by how many people are actually being discipled. Always a part of it. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, man, I was 33 years old. We started a church that I figured we were going to probably starve to death. I didn't know what was going to, and all of a sudden it took off. And I think back to just trying to put people, some of the people that led connect groups early on, like when I think back, I'm like, not all of them. So if you led one, I'm not necessarily talking about you, but some of the ones.
But if you did and did a bad job.
But some of the ones that because you're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And, you literally, it's like having a tiger by the tail, and you're just trying to survive. And the next thing you know, you're pushing 2,000 people, and then it's kind of like having trouble in a marriage and deciding we'll have kids, and that fixes it. So it was already challenging, and then we start 5 churches and how many years or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, 4 years.
4 years or whatever. And so, and all of a sudden you look around and you're like, holy cow, like this is, this is unsustainable.
Hmm. Well, I think going back to even the like illustration we gave is that some of the functions were kind of created not out of necessity, but like we got all these people, like, and what we don't have, do? And like you were saying, like, we didn't have the people developed that probably to this point that we need to. So let's come up with a program that's going to help support it. And so it was, again, not necessarily from a bad heart, but, and I think going back to like why I struggled with as we were making this transition is I'm going, all right, developing people is all well and good, but we still got all these functions we got to take care of, you know, and how are we going to do that?
What are some examples of some of the programs and functions?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, that like we see what we want out of people, but we still are having 250 kids come every single Sunday. And there are just logistical things to doing that and maintaining that. And so, and again, that's where I don't want the church to feel like a organization or a business, but it's like, there's that aspect of things that you're having to think about and figure out. And so I think like I would get caught up in that logistical aspect of this and going like, if that's not thought about, what are we going to do come Sunday? And so, yeah, I'd love to spend my week on people, but you know, so I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's what,
that's how you felt.
Yeah.
And it, there was a reality of as you're transitioning, like, you're almost having to juggle both at the same time. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get this going, but you're trying to take care of people that are in this place. And so it takes a while for all of that.
It's that metaphor of like building a plane when it's in the air. Yeah. And it's like, that's what it felt like.
I've done
like.
That before.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Not, yeah, it's not great.
Same. I've had a tiger by the tail. It's not fun. But I think I draw that out because I think that's very relatable. Mm-hmm. I would guess other people in other churches and other pastors, and I think us, I can be prone to drift back towards, you know, it'd be great. Let's get 400 people in this room, and we'll just get it all solved in one, you know, like one program or one thing that is programmed. Mm-hmm. Not just saying like that's not meaning that we start. What's the thing where kids? Awana, like starting something like that, you know. It's not just that. It is the broken system involves a programmatic mindset. Yeah.
Yes. And
I love when we finish each other's sentences.
I know, man. But when you think about it, committing to doing what Jesus did, what Paul did, what the early church did, is playing the long game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that we don't see a lot in our culture today. Yeah. Is people who play the long game with anything. Mm-hmm. It's more of a what's the quickest way to get there.
Yeah.
And but again, that's not definitely not the best way in the church. So so in the past we used to describe our church and we would have said that we were staff led and elder accountable. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of churches function that way where the elders are more of a board than they are elders, biblically, you know, biblical elders. So when you think about it, like, how does that model of church work and what are the benefits of that? Like, we talked about it being easier in some ways. What makes it easier?
I think sometimes as a church staff grows and when it's, you know, comparatively a larger staff church, I think sometimes what typically in maybe a smaller church elders would be responsible for, you now have staff that are capable, you know, are strong leaders, capable leaders that they're able to manage some of that and carry it out in a very effective way and be very successful and be. And so I think sometimes there's that side of things and that when you have people that are completely on the outside, it can create this, you know, picture of until you're in it, you don't really understand kind of the nuance of it all. And so I think there can be when you have elders that are more on the accountability side of things, there is trust has to be there because they have to trust that, all right, we're appointing the right staff to be able to do these things. And so again, in and of itself, like there are good things about it. And I think it's not always that it's like so unhealthy, but it's, as we said, just not necessarily ultimately the way that God desired it for it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that churches can work from an unideal situation to a more ideal expression, but I think the core of like, so the, we can, let's use examples from culture maybe that like would highlight the issue. Like if it's going to be a board, is that board for the accountability of the body, or is it for the accountability of just the elder or just the pastor?
The guy, yeah.
On the one hand, like I think congregationalism, one of the reasons that I would struggle to ever be Southern Baptist again is watching what happened to a dear pastor, mentor, friend of mine that preached the gospel, preached the Bible, like, and just sought to love those people, did their funerals, did their weddings, went to the hospital, did all the things that you're supposed to do in part of the guy. And after 20 years doing all of that, in trying to just simply shift, we're going to make space for small groups that we could begin to and be intentional about making disciples. The board, which in this case was deacons, rallied around and basically chased him off, chased him into retirement in a stage when he, I know, had given away over half of his retirement because he believed in something that was happening in a move of God in India. And he gave he sacrificed his retirement, and these people couldn't sacrifice a program.
Those things become, you know, the golden calf, so to speak. And
and that's the like, so there's a, so on the one hand, like, what is the point of the board? Right. And I think that a church could operate from a place of like, I mean, this is what Presbyterians do, right? Presbyterians operate from a place of, we've got a board, a presbytery that they oversee the health of the local pastor and their folks. Hard for me to wrap my head around, one, infant baptism, two, how they could exactly have local an expression of accountability.
I mean, I would say just go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and go ahead and hit every denomination while you're going.
I'm working on it. I'm just trying to situate it in that, like, people can be in some of these other, the pastor at Trinity, I think he's wonderful.
Yeah.
I think he's an incredible guy.
Absolutely.
They have found a thing that works for them. At the end of the day, though, the point of the leadership structure is to support the work of shepherding and equipping the saints.
Right.
And so local elders that are helping facilitate the shepherding and the shepherding of the sheep, which we are included in that as pastors and elders. At the end of the day, I guess the short way to say it is, I think this is what the words mean.
And
there's three Greek words, poimen, presbyteros, episkopos. All of them refer to, can be used interchangeably as elder, but the function of it, especially poimen, gets at being a shepherd, pastoring, overseeing. And those are used, that's what we substitute in the word English for, is for those three Greek words. And so I'm just saying, you could work from a not ideal situation of senior pastor, no additional elders in place, you got deacons, congregational voting, and you could lead your folks to a better way. Sorry, what was the original question?
No, just some of the I think benefits of doing that with a staff-led, elder-accountable church. And I think sometimes it lets you move faster.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because you know, the staff are kind of making decisions on the fly, on the go, taking the big ones back to the elders and getting approval. But it sometimes allowed things to move faster because you're not making that decision necessarily in conjunction with the elders. You're kind of going and taking maybe a list of things and saying, hey, these are the things we want to do, and getting their blessing, and then you carry it out.
And I'll say that I don't think that even when we were more structured this way, there was never a heart of, well, let's try to slide this by. Let's try to, you know, I felt like we all, there was always a really healthy aspect of like, we know at the end of the day, they are ultimately accountable for all of this. And so like, there is this, I think, reverence and respect and like, we're gonna submit to anything they did desire. I just think that there was, it was much more probably, I think because there was also a lot, from their direction to us, such a trust is they're like, we don't want to get in your way. We trust you all. And so like, it was a healthy dynamic of trust and not trying to slide anything by.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that if I knew there were things that were iffy, there was a good chance that at the end of a 2-hour meeting, they were going to say yes, just because we'd been there so long. Right. So, but anyway, but yeah, it was always, the heart was always to have transparency and be accountable. It wasn't to try to do whatever we wanted to do and that kind of thing. And so,
to speak well of our, because it's the same guys that are the elders now, absolutely, that are the elders then.
And they made the transition with us. Right. And that's what's incredible.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, is.
And to speak well of them, of like, I think what they did in this model is that they were intentional about caring for you well. I think what you, in the short run, kind of back to the where we started of, in the short run, there was an advantage to that of like, you were cared for. I think our staff was cared for, but they were not eldering
right
alongside. They weren't also equipping the saints. They were not shepherding the saints. And that's the transition of empowering them. And that takes longer vetting. That takes longer training. That takes a longer process. You can't just roll a 24-year-old into that.
Right.
And so
it can't be microwaved. Mm-hmm. It takes time. So when you think about this and this transition, what are the most critical decisions or steps that you take when you're like, what were those critical things that we had to do, or the challenging things that we had to do? What challenges are people going to face if they try to make this transition? What do y'all see in this?
I'm a big proponent of having things on paper. I feel like you can have all the ideas in the world, but like, there's no way to have clarity. There's no way to have even unity around something when it just lives in somebody's head. And because inevitably you're going to have different interpretations of that. And so for me, one aspect of it was like, we can't just continue just to have like, you know, water cooler conversations around these concepts and these ideas, and it just be, you know, like, because I think about even like initially, it was just like us sitting in offices, just going like, let's just talking through it, trying to like think about it. And but until it could become tangible to the point where we could actually say, like, and hand it to somebody, say, this is what it is, I think like it's really hard to get buy-in, to get it to be consistent, to be, and actually, and then I think it comes is when what you write down actually begins to make the decisions for you.
Yeah.
It becomes less personal. It becomes much more like, and it's the reason that we go to God's word on things, is it's like, it's, we don't have to have a vague understanding of what God desires. Like, he has written it very clearly. And so I think for, this is the same type of thing, is it just protects everybody involved, because you can very clearly point back to, this is the expectation, this is the requirement, this is the standard, and this is why.
Yeah.
I think several things. I think you did a great job of teaching the philosophical underpinnings of this for many years, and to take time to get this from a theological, biblical, philosophical construct of, why does this matter?
Yeah.
And getting that teaching into the heart of people. That way, when it comes to decision-making time, there's no surprise.
Right.
And the rationale is there. And that meant also being very patient. I think having to be patient with people, that change is hard, especially when you're disrupting people's comforts. Mm-hmm. I think helping them to see that we're not just trying to make you uncomfortable. We're trying to point all of us and what is best for the most amount of people.
Right.
And so I think that, but then I think there was a breaking point. You had to have the courage to say enough is enough.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it anymore.
Right.
And, you know, and so I think that those are three things that come to mind of like, you're going to have to, at some point, pastor, leader, you're going to have the courage to say enough is enough.
Yeah.
And balance that with, this is going to take patience and time. And if it's not working where you are, you can come to our Heart and Soul class and we will walk with you through our assimilation process and raise you up to be a Connect Group leader and then a Connect Group coach and maybe an elder, and then you can go plant a church.
There you go. Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that can be a challenge, and this is not to pat myself on the back at all, it's just a reality, is that the guy has to be okay not being the guy. Yeah. You know,
the guy has to step back.
Yeah,
and step alongside beside the guys.
Yeah, and that, you know, was something that I felt my conviction of what God wants was greater than a desire to be the guy. Mm-hmm. You know,
but that was probably the easiest part of all that for you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not, I think that's what I was going to say is I think that that's been what he has demonstrated since the very beginning is like he kind of always pushed against from the second we would try to make him the guy, he'd be like, mm-mm. And so I think that that's what made, like, I think we had so much anticipation of the second we start talking about this and people begin to have this idea that maybe Brandon's not the guy anymore. Mm-hmm. It's going to cause issue, but I think we've realized is people have been far more okay with it, but I think it's because of how you've led all along. Like, that made it so much easier to digest, and it's like, oh, like, there has been some aspects of that we've gotten right, but again, I think it's just from the standpoint of how you've always led.
And I know, and we're kind of going to wrap this up, but I know you talked about putting things on paper, mm-hmm. and you did a really good job of that with our bylaws. And I know we all kind of participated mm-hmm. in that process, but did a really good job of putting all that down. And in the next episode, I'd like for us to really be able to go through some of those mm-hmm. practical things that are on paper, because I think they make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that it can be very helpful for our people who maybe they don't fully understand to be able to listen to again. New people who come into our church to be able to go back and listen to, but maybe for people who aren't a part of our church, but they want to see, like, how did they set this up to mm-hmm. be able to listen to that. But I do remember, like, when we were having our Heart and Soul, which, you know, Heart and Soul being more of our members, the people who were locked arm in arm with us, Heart and Soul, to carry out Jesus's mission. And we were having that Heart and Soul family meeting, mm-hmm. and we were announcing this and really, like, finally saying, like, this is what we're doing. And I may be wrong, but I felt like y'all were pretty nervous about that. Mm-hmm. And, like, for me, like, I had so much peace about it, mm-hmm. because I felt like, I just felt like our people were going to go, yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. And that was what happened.
That was,
like,
what happened.
There was a ton of excitement about it. And I had multiple people come up and go, this makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we get it. Now, yeah. Mm-hmm. And for some people, I think it was even a thing of, I see it now, mm-hmm. you know, and that was really, really encouraging. And so I'm really excited about where we're at. I'm really excited about where we're going. I'm excited and thankful for all of the people in our church who, and so many people in this church, push me to be a better Christian, yeah. like push me to be a better follower of Jesus. And that's so encouraging, man. Yeah. And just to think of where we're headed in the future is a lot of fun. And to think about what God's got in store, not just for the church, but for the people in the church and the experiences they're going to get to have being used by God, and them seeing miracles that they're a part of, mm-hmm. rather than just hearing us talk about them. That's what's really cool. And I look forward to seeing more and more of that.
I agree.
So
that's awesome.
So next time we'll jump into some of the practical things we put in place that I think are really important and that are really life-giving, and that line up with Scripture, but also make a lot of sense. So that'll be it for today. We'll see you guys next week.